You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
One of my colleagues and friends in a previous congregation loved to sail. At least once a week, he would head down to Dana Point, where his boat was docked. And once you get there and on his boat, it's a very short trip out of the little harbor to get into the past the breakwater, and there you are in the open ocean. I was always quick to accept any invite I might get to sail with him. And as I think back, there's one particular trip that I will never forget. Things had been pretty uneventful. That was until there was this spray that popped up out of the water about 50 feet away from us. And before we knew it, there was this arching back, and then all of a sudden this fluke coming out of the water, and we quickly realized that we now had a gray whale as a companion. Well, it turned out it was not just one whale, but a pod of whales that were swimming to one side of us. Now, there are some really strict rules about getting no closer than 100 yards to a whale if you're out at sea. Well, these whales had a different idea that day, and it became very apparent that during their dives, they were crossing underneath the boat and coming up on the other side. So we started to slow down as best we could, because the thought of one of these cetaceans under our boat, well, that was a little unnerving, to say the least. And so we finally managed to remove ourselves from the center of the pod, following them at the appropriate distance. And it was so exciting to see these amazing creatures close up, but keeping them indeed at a distance. They could have certainly wreaked havoc with our ship. Well, whales have captured our collective imagination, whether it be a writer like Melville or one who wrote the tale of Jonah we're going to explore over the next several weeks. Now, I'm entitling this series, A Whale of a Tale. Go ahead, you can moan. My son did when I told him the title. But remember, folks, on one level, this is a fishing story, a story about the one that got away, and we need to treat it accordingly as we do all fishing stories, right? Now, the other thing I want to say is that most every translation of this ancient tale talks about a big fish. But just so you know, the Mediterranean has several species of whale, so that's not an anomaly. Not at all. We probably should also remember that our ancient counterparts probably did not have the sophistication to differentiate between a whale or a fish or anything else that was in the water. They were all fish. It was just of varying sizes. Well, this is also in this story a great example of what is probably more an allegory, a representative tale, a symbolic story than anything else. It's fascinating to me that there are so many modern-day Christians who have this strange need to somehow take these Old Testament stories and try to prove how they are absolutely factual. Well, friends, the Jewish rabbis never felt the need to go through all of these strange contortions with these stories, but instead treated these stories as teaching tools. And this is an excellent example of how a story can be true, but not factual. There is an underlying truth about the human experience, as well as our experience of God in this tale of Jonah, that is absolutely true. And the purpose of the text is to be there to convey the truth and nothing more than that. It is reasonable to believe our ancient counterparts probably had a much better understanding of approaching a text that way than some of our modern-day literalists. So don't expect me to go through all kinds of contortions trying to prove how this could or could not have happened. So let's really get to the point and talk about Jonah. This is a weird story. There's just no doubt about it. In fact, it is quite different from most of our biblical prophetic material. For one thing, this is really more a narrative, a short story, than it is anything else. And while there's a typical prophetic device of God's voice being sent to speak to an unfaithful people, The story really focuses on Jonah and Jonah's own experience. So that's a real big difference if we were sitting down, say, reading something from Isaiah or Jeremiah. While those books might have a little bit of personal narrative, it does not encompass the majority of the book, as it does in Jonah. The next thing that is startlingly different is that Jonah is told by God to bring his pronouncement upon the people of Nineveh. Now, Nineveh exists in what is modern-day Iraq. And the thing to remember, Nineveh was never a part of the northern or southern kingdoms of Israel and Judah, because it was a part of the Assyrian Empire. And the Assyrian Empire were the enemies of the Hebrew people, and we should not forget that. And so, you see the problem that we have here? God, in this story, is choosing to focus attention on those who were not the chosen people. God was caring about the people of Nineveh, and for many, this probably opened a real theological can of worms, to say the least. Why would God be caring about these people? Now, the general belief about Jonah is that he was a prophet in some point during the 8th century BCE, just like the prophet Amos, who we heard from last week. And while we would normally associate Jonah with the northern kingdom of Israel, we really have no other account of him other than this relationship that he had with Nineveh. Now, let's think about that. The vast majority of our Hebrew scriptures are focused on the descendants of Sarah and Abraham. So why would a work like this, which really does not focus on the people of Israel or Judah, but their arch enemies instead, be included? Well, remember how we also talk about the image and perception of God changing over time? I believe this could be seen as an intentional attempt to say that all of the creation, all of the people of the world are God's. It was radical for that time, and when we think about it, it really is somewhat radical for the day and age in which we live. Well, the drama of this story really is quite simple in the passage that we heard read today. God felt that the people of Nineveh were wicked. And in this particular case, the wickedness is never really spelled out. So we have to go to work assuming things. We might assume that perhaps there was injustice, or there was corruption, or there was a lack of care for the poor, but all of that is speculation and nothing more. But apparently this wickedness that's mentioned in the text was enough to destroy the city. But we also learn, because it was a great city, God decided it was a city worth saving and said this to Jonah. And so Jonah heard the voice of God. And I suspect that for a prophet of Israel, this experience was much more of a bad dream than it was some kind of ecstatic vision. Here he is being told to go on God's behalf to people who were the enemies of Israel. So he did exactly what he thought she should do. Run away as fast as you can, absolutely the other direction. In fact, he was so intent upon getting away from all of this that he booked passage on a vessel to sail far, far away. So keeping the story so far very simple, God had a passion for Nineveh. Jonah was to be the instrument that would affect this, and Jonah's considered response was, no way. No way am I going to Nineveh. Well, this is what I mean about this being a true story. How many times have we found ourselves in places where we knew what we needed to do, but our choice was to avoid it at all costs? Maybe it was in our circle of relationships that we avoided speaking the truth. Maybe it was in our workplaces where our conscience was telling us no, but our mouth instead said, okay. So let's pause for a moment. Do you remember a time when you could not do what you know you needed to do. Think about that time. What were the circumstances? What did it do to you? Was there ever a resolution? Or might that be something which is still hanging? We certainly, based on our own experience, should have great, great sympathy for Jonah. He was going about his life, he was minding his own business, and he hears this message that he has to go to the people who are his enemies and tell them that they are profoundly wicked. And this is being told to them by a God who is not their God. Jonah was supposed to make this pronouncement, and he was also to tell the people of Nineveh that things had to change. And while it wasn't specifically stated, we assume if things didn't change, there would be total destruction. Wow. What a position to be put in, the position of Jonah. Of course, our choice would have been to go straight to Nineveh, right? Or would we have assumed perhaps this vision thing that was going on in our minds was the fact that we celebrated a little too much the previous evening and it really wasn't God talking to us? Probably closer to what we might be thinking, right? Well, the more we think about this story, friends, the truer it becomes. Think about Nineveh, the great city, the wicked city. The corporate failings of a community, of a nation, of a city, are things that still exist. We know that. We know that too well. Human nature still finds people opting to shy away from important tasks because they are just too hard. Friends, we really do understand what it means to be that city of Nineveh. It's a modern-day reality for us. When we think of the things that happen here in this land, is it unreasonable to suggest that we are Nineveh? The terrible events of the last week have been yet another reminder of all of the things that are wrong with us. It is easy to point fingers and blame, and we forget. We forget instead that, friends, we're the ones who have militarized our police forces. We are the people who continue to turn and look the other way and are quick to rationalize why the violence happens and ignoring that the basis for much of it is in deeply held ongoing racism. We are unwilling to even consider any kind of gun control because, let's face it, we are a people who apparently love our guns. We are a people who love to be armed. And isn't it strange that we are known around the world as a nation who loves violence, but we don't care. We don't care about it. We don't care that whether it's true or not, and we don't care if that's the perception that others have of us. We don't care. We pride ourselves in being the beacon of democracy, yet our politics and ideologies are much more important to the point that perpetual gridlock seems to now be our new norm. We're Nineveh. We're Nineveh. We talk about the equality of all people. As long as people look a certain way and act a certain way, yet we continue to clutch tightly to the perceived yet never real fears to which we choose to subscribe. We believe we have a right to wealth and prosperity for a few, and the rest do not matter, as long as it does not affect us personally. So what do you think? Are we like Nineveh? Are we like Nineveh? And what's even sadder is that there are some purveyors of a certain kind of Christianity that would be in vehement disagreement with all of these statements that were like Nineveh. There's unfortunately a branch of faith that views everyone else is the problem and claims no culpability for anything we experience. I don't know about you, but I have yet to figure out a way to rationalize this kind of mindset when Jesus' instruction to love neighbor as self is at the core of what it means to be a Christian, to be a follower of Jesus. It would sure be simpler, much simpler, if that were not the case. But Jesus was pretty specific on this issue. I suppose it is our right to practice a faith that caters to fears and the lowest common denominators. But friends, let's not continue to call it Christianity. Following Jesus is hard. It's hard work. We will stumble, we'll fall, we'll make mistakes. But God is still with us. God is with us in this calling. God is there providing the grace and the love which is sustaining and comforting and life-giving. So this takes us to probably what's the most uncomfortable part of the message today, whether we like it or not. Friends, followers of Jesus have a calling to be Jonas. We're called to be Jonas. Our task is to respond to God's call for justice, knowing full well that our instinct will be to run the other way. We are called to be like the prophet in the sense that it is our task, nobody else's, it is our task to do the work of God in this world. We do that work. We do God's work by bringing a message of hope to people. A message that change is possible. Change is possible for people who are in desperate need. Friends, it is our job to not only be the voice, but to demonstrate by our actions that we are committed to making our communities places which are free of violence, where people support one another, where we see every single person as a beloved child of God. And the good news is that we will not be alone in our efforts. God will be with us the same way God has always, always been with those who choose to do the work of good news. Friends, how is God calling us? How is God calling us to be voices for change and hope in this time and in this place? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.